Two women are killed in a car crash near Ronan. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you about some baseball-sized hail and funnel clouds that damage property in southeast Montana. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with Republican U.S. House candidate Ryan Zinke. The Montana Highway Patrol says two women died in a one-vehicle crash northeast of Ronan. Lake County officers say a passerby spotted a vehicle on its top in a canal along Canyon Mill Road between Pablo and Ronan just after 6 a.m. today. The patrol says the crash happened between 11 p.m. and 11:30 last night. Trooper Brian Cassie says the car swerved for an unknown reason, struck a guardrail, and flipped on its top, landing in the canal. The car crashed, killed the driver, 54-year-old Eva Skelton, and her passenger, 56-year-old Karen Jor. Autopsies are planned.
And in other news from around the state, a 20-year-old Corvallis woman faces four felony charges for a hash oil explosion that injured two people, including a teenager who was treated at a Seattle burn center. The Ravalli Republic reports Mariah Marie Smith was charged last week with conspiring to operate a clandestine laboratory, criminal production and possession of dangerous drugs, and criminal endangerment. Smith did not enter a plea. She remained jailed today in lieu of a $20,000 bail. Ravalli County authorities learned about the May 6th explosion when the teen was dropped off at the Hamilton Hospital with burns on his head, neck, shoulders, chest, hands, and feet. Smith said she was sleeping in her car and that it was her boyfriend, Howard Matthew Wees III, and the boy who were making hash oil. Wees was arrested on an outstanding warrant.
State and federal agencies plan to start pushing bison into Yellowstone National Park on Tuesday in an annual event meant to keep the migrating animals away from cattle in southwestern Montana. State Department of Livestock Executive Officer Christian McKay said workers on horseback and ATVs plan to drive about 300 bison in West Yellowstone, roughly 7 miles back into the park. Unlike previous years, there is no plan to use a helicopter to assist in this year's efforts. That practice had drawn lawsuits from environmental groups, but was upheld by federal appeals court last year. Bison migrate from the park to lower elevations in Montana in the winter. A federal state agreement requires their return to the park in the spring to make way for cattle to graze.
Montana wildlife officials are proposing to cancel sage-grouse hunting this fall as populations of the large upland game bird continue to decline. Last year's count of male birds on sage-grouse breeding grounds was the lowest recorded since 1980. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks spokesman Ron Ossheim said today that the closure will be considered by commissioners at their meeting on Thursday. Officials would consider reopening hunting next year if the birds' numbers appear to be rebounding. Sage-grouse are ground-dwelling birds known for their elaborate mating rituals. Found in 11 states and 2 provinces, they have suffered a steep decline in recent decades. Causes include disease, the conversion of prairie lands for agricultural and residential development, and pressure from the oil and gas industry.
A storm with hailstones up to the size of baseballs caused property damage across southeastern Montana. Meteorologist John Campbell of the National Weather Service tells the Billings Gazette winds gusting up to 59 miles per hour yesterday evening accompanied a hailstorm that broke car windows, shredded siding, and damaged trees along the region. Campbell says funnel clouds were reported in Park and Carter counties, and a spotter in Powder River County reported seeing a tornado touch down. Just over 1/3 of an inch of precipitation fell in 30 minutes in Billings. The Weather Service says hailstones up to 2.75 inches, just slightly smaller than a baseball, were reported in northeast of Billings and east of Colstrip, while smaller hail was reported in Billings.
Susan Cundiff is a 36-year-old single mother of three who works as a department assistant in the business school at the University of Montana, is a sales associate with Victoria's Secret, and sells skin and healthcare products. She also served in the National Guard, and finding more support for veterans is one of the reasons Cundiff is running a long-shot campaign to win the Republican primary for U.S. Senate.
I feel that we have to take care of our veterans. Another issue that's important to me is pro-life, but I think that we need to take that beyond the step of just saying that I'm pro-life and that I absolutely support adoption, and I think that we need to promote adoption within our country rather than for getting those children.
Cundiff says the U.S. is experiencing a conflict of cultures, both within and without the Republican Party, with people of good intentions unable to find common ground.
So what I would hope to do is to be able to get the conversation rolling and to be able to say, okay, well, this is what you want and this is what you want. And why do those things not meet up? And what can we do that's right for the people that the people want?
Cundiff says she doesn't think it's feasible to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but she would remove the act's mandate for health coverage. She says individuals, not the government, should take responsibility for their own health care. She has no position yet on the Ryan budget that Republicans have passed in the House.
It's something that I do need to look into, but I do believe in support in balancing the budget that we don't need to be living further on credit. We do need to be able to get down, to pay our bills and to be able to bring our country back up.
Cundiff says she's campaigning by appearing at Republican-sponsored events. This is her first attempt at public office.
And it's absolutely worth it to me to stand up and say, I'm going to try my best. Because, like, you know, I just can't sit back and say, I don't like where the country's headed and not try to do something about it. So that's what I'm going to do. And if all I can do is to help other people to feel like that they can stand up and to do something as well, then I've done something good.
Cundiff faces Champ Edmonds and Steve Daines in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate.
Representatives of a private corrections company from Louisiana say they've started training guards but still don't have any inmates for a jail in Hardin that sat vacant since it was built in 2007. Steve Afeman with Emerald Correctional Management said training begins today for about 30 guards. He says the company intends to solicit inmates from American Indian tribes, but no agreements have been reached. The jail is owned by Hardin's Economic Development Agency, Two Rivers Authority. Chairman John Malvich says Emerald signed an operating contract to run the 464-bed jail on May 6th. The $27 million jail rose to notoriety after its backers failed to get any contracts for inmates. In 2009, a California man duped officials with a promise to turn the jail into a military training camp.
Five Republicans are running to serve as Montana's next representative in the U.S. House. The race has highlighted a rift between four candidates who generally view themselves as being more consistently conservative than former Montana State Senator Ryan Zinke, an accusation denied by the 52-year-old Zinke. He recently stopped by our studios to talk about his campaign, and the conversation started with what he says are his qualifications for the job. He tells Edward O'Brien his 23 years of service with the Navy SEALs and stint as commander of the elite SEAL Team 6 is a good place to start.
I had the privilege of leading some of the finest troops in America and some of the most dangerous missions. And when life and death is on the line, leadership counts. You know, my daughter's a Navy diver, my son-in-law is a Navy SEAL active duty. And when it comes to war, I can tell you I'm the last person that wants to go to war. You know, I've written a lot of letters home, I've been to a lot of funerals. But if we do have to go to war, then you want to make sure that our troops have everything they need to win decisively on the field of battle. And before they leave, we need a plan how to bring them back. A lot of times we'll go forward, you know, on a foreign shore, and we won't have an idea how to return our troops or when is the right time to return our troops.
We have a lot of issues to get to. Let's start with one of the big ones, and that is energy. Lots of coal moving out of Montana, and there are people who want to push a lot more out to the West Coast, get it out to India, China. What do you make of that? Good plan or not?
Well, I think energy independence for America is probably the biggest priority. Certainly our force disposition overseas would be a lot differently if we're energy independent. And then internally, domestically, I think the gas is the biggest play, just for our shale and where it's at. You have the Marcellus Shale on the East Coast, you have the Bakken up north, and the biggest player is the Eagle Ford Shale down in Texas. And I do believe this country can be energy independent. I think we can bring back manufacturing, particularly with gas. And if we are energy independent, I think then we can shape at least our position in the world, you know, much more effectively. And, you know, we won't have to be, you know, held hostage with a foreign country for foreign oil.
What do you make of the renewables? How effective are they in terms of energy output, cost, build out, et cetera?
I'm a big advocate where there is a place for government, particularly in the research end of it. But when you field in energy, when you field you know, either wind or nuclear or gas, I think it has to compete on the market. I don't think it should subsidize anything when it's fielded. But certainly there's a place up front for research and development to find cleaner burning fuels. And, I love technology. I think that's the future. But we have to be able to innovate, think out of the box, and find solutions. So I'm all of the above.
Keystone XL, good idea or not?
I think it's a great idea. It's certainly, you can't argue that it's a safer way to transport fuel. And it isn't about safety, because that particular pipeline is probably the most engineered, safest pipeline ever conceived and engineered in the history of mankind. I think the argument really is about fossil fuels or no fossil fuels. I think they're using Keystone as a wedge, if you will, against fossil fuels.
What do you make of the administration's continued delay?
Well, I think it's unfortunate, and I think it's absolutely political. Certainly you have a gentleman with a great deal of influence and money that has said openly that he'll donate, to the party if that project is delayed. I think it's a tragedy. I think that, when the State Department's own documents show that there's no significant environmental impact, I think it's a shame that our policy is being dictated by polls and what the media can produce rather than facts on the ground.
What gentleman who will contribute to the party?
Well, let's not go names, but he has said openly he's a environmentalist, which is fine. But he has said openly that he'll give $100 million to the Democratic National Party if that project doesn't go forward.
If it's open, why not go into names? Who?
We won't go there.
Do you believe climate change is A, real phenomenon, B, caused by human industrial activity?
I think climate change remains, a watch. I don't know what the truth is. As a former geologist, I look at when volcanic actions occur, there's more CO2 emitted in one catastrophic event than hundreds of years. Certainly I think went from global warming to climate change. I don't think that the forest problems are a direct result of climate change as much as it is mismanagement. I think the concern has always been, what if I'm wrong? What if climate change is, in fact, real? And there's different reports. Leading scientists on both sides, the evidence, I think, is still up in the air. The issue is, what if it's true, and then what can we do about it? Certainly, I don't think we should dismantle American industry on a maybe, but again, it kind of goes back to energy independence. I think the priority has become energy independent. And then over time, make our energy policy cleaner, more efficient. And I think there's a lot of room to work on that.
But a big part of your energy platform is fossil fuels. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think realistically, to say that you're not going to power this country, at least in the next 50 years, on fossil fuels and somehow be competitive globally, I think is wrong.
The most recent jobs report for April, pretty good. If you look at the numbers, 288,000 jobs created. Expectation was 218. Are we finally starting to see that turnaround?
I think you look at the GDP. The GDP is 0.1. And you take the energy sector out of this country, we'd probably be in depression. How's Montana doing? Well, Montana is 49th in wage. And it's an interesting, Billings is the best economy in Montana. Billings has 500 homeless high school kids. That's the best economy in Montana, and I think Republicans need to talk about this, because I see that the fundamental building block of America is the family, and the family is under enormous pressure. It's hard to find a 40-hour work week because it penalizes a business because it comes with benefits. So a lot of single parents are having to do 3 or 4 part-time jobs. So I think we can do a lot better.
A lot better how?
It has nothing to do with clean air and clean water, which we all respect and want. But when the regulatory environment is so, the barriers, as far as business goes, and when banks can't make a loan because you don't fit the profile that was developed where? Washington, D.C. But it's not just the banks or, Dodd-Frank. Then you go to Sarbanes-Oxley. Does that regulatory environment make you a better business, make you more efficient? No. And you have, EPA, you can't get in the forest anymore to harvest timber because every timber sale is challenged legally. I grew up when the Forest Service, was running around with an older truck, a bucket, and a shovel.
What do you think about the Democrats' proposal to boost minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10?
Well, it may make sense in New York City or Washington, D.C. It doesn't make sense if you're in Montana and you're trying to have a business. It'll crush, particularly in the service industry, where there's tips involved. One size doesn't fit all. I think you got to look at what's happening in a state. The local economy drives it, and see how businesses are doing. And a lot of businesses are struggling really, really hard in Montana. You know, again, it comes down to wage, and I don't know very many businesses that are at minimum wage. You know, most of them are above that, but I think, unfortunately, political play.
Most Americans support that minimum wage increase.
Well, I'm not sure most Montanans do, and I think again, one size fits all doesn't make sense. I think, you know, the view from the Potomac is a lot different than the view from Missouri, and I think you got to look at what's happening locally.
Gun control. In 2008, NRA Political Victory Fund gave you a 42%.
Well, that was on the basis of a survey.
What about that survey?
Well, it was interesting because when I was overseas, SEAL Team 6 worked really hard to develop the 50 cal sniper rifle. And I know what that system was developed for. Hardened targets, 1,500 meters. You know, hardened targets, I'm talking, you know, armored vehicles and things. And I tell you, when I retired in 2008, you know, after having 20 sniper teams in Iraq or so, you know, I had some reservations about that 50 cal. And then I went around Montana. I tell you, Montana does not share the same reservations I do. So, you know, I did change my position on it. I think it's a fair assessment, and it's a sign of leadership that you're going to be thoughtful and you're going to realize who your boss is. You know, but I think there are areas where guns are not appropriate, and that would be, you know, federal courthouses, airports. If a local school board doesn't want guns in the school, you know, I think that's the local school board decision. Montana has a legacy of enjoying firearms, and I want to protect that.
Concealed weapons okay on military bases?
That's up to the commander. You know, there's a base commander there, just like everything else. He's got to look at, you know, what's on the base. There's some bases that are level one security. There's other bases that aren't. I think that's a commander's policy.
Generally, though, what do you personally believe?
The bases I have, I wouldn't have a problem with it personally, but I know there are some bases and some missions, in particular when our nuclear arsenal is around, and there's some facilities there that bear an additional level of security.
On the Project Vote Smart political courage test, you described yourself as undecided on the issue of gun show background checks.
Well, that was a survey in 2008. I've resolved in that one. I don't think you need background checks. I toured around Montana. I think I've been to every gun show, and I think what's happened to gun shows is good. And quite frankly, I think there's a lot of distrust at databases on the federal level, the manipulation of NSA and spying and all those type of things in a federal level database. At the end of the day, I think a local sheriff probably is more attuned to his community than some database being hidden somewhere else.
Abortion, pro-life candidate.
Yep.
But you believe there are exceptions to the rule.
Well, you know, I have a 100% voting record with the Right for Life, but I also understand as Congress, you're not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. So I think you should focus on things that will make it rare. I think you should focus on education, prevention, and making sure the government doesn't pay for it or advocate for it. If you're really concerned about the numbers, which I think we all should be, is that that's how you lessen the numbers and make it as rare as you can. But I think it is education and prevention.
In 2009, NARAL Pro-Choice Montana gave you a 65% rating, pretty high for a conservative candidate, and that's what your opponents on the Republican side point to and say, look, this is an inconsistent stance on this very important issue.
Well, and it's funny because I've championed the issue with the Unborn Victims Bill and parental notification and things, but having a 65% rating means that I support education of our youth and I support prevention, then so be it. You know, again, I think as a thoughtful leader, you have to look at it. No one likes termination, but let's make it as rare as we can. And that's education prevention.
Special Operations for America Super PAC. You left that role before throwing your hat into the ring, but continued to benefit from funds from that group, and that's raised a lot of eyebrows.
Special Operations for America was designed for a Romney Super PAC. I supported, you know, Governor Romney being the President of the United States. I toured the country. We raised a lot of money. Most of the donor base was veterans. We championed veterans' issues, rules of engagement, benefits, what's happening with Benghazi. And I was very, very careful to make it a what's called an independent expenditure. That means every dime comes in accounted for. All the donors are known. It's not a black op type organization. It is completely transparent. And it was intentionally done that way. And I was a volunteer chairman. And so when I left, I made sure that the next chairman, that I didn't have a part in that selection process. There was an interim chairman. I just made sure that all the books were absolutely clean as they are. We don't coordinate with them. I look at what they're doing, and they're not only supporting me. They're supporting other candidates at a higher rate. Most of the candidates are former military background that have similar views on our country.
Doesn't this open the door for other candidates down the line to form their own super PACs and then later on announce their own candidacies? It's again, a judgment call, that's all.
Well, you know, the law is very, very clear. You don't coordinate with them. And are organizations free to do what they want? Absolutely. I'm not only supported by this organization, but others. There's a lot of veterans organizations that support me. And again, I'm comfortable with the rules. You don't coordinate.
In hindsight, would you have done it differently? It's caused some grief.
Well, you know, again, if you're on the left side, you know, far left side of the political spectrum, I'm probably too conservative. You know, I've been called a Tea Party, et cetera. And then if you're on the far right side, extremist right, probably, you know, I'm just not conservative enough. And so I think my legacy is that I'm thoughtful. I look at the bills. I want to make, you know, progress on making sure businesses and families can make a living in Montana. You know, it's already hard enough here to make a living. We don't have to make it any harder. And so I'm particularly concerned with working families. You know, I'm a blue-collar guy. My father was the youngest master plumber in Montana's history. I know where I came from. I don't get Potomac fever. I don't yield to pressure. And what I try to do is do my best, do my duty, and I believe that America can be restored. I'm a believer in the American people. I think we're good, honest, compassionate, but we have to make sure that innovation and thinking out of the box, that ability is protected.
So, in other words, you have no regrets about SOFA?
Yeah, I really don't. Matter of fact, I'll take the opposite view. I'm proud of the work that SOFA did. I'm sorry that Governor Romney wasn't elected. I've always championed veteran issues. There's a lot of hurt out there in the veteran community. So I'm proud of what Special Operations did, and I'm proud of my role.
I know you have to get out of here. One last question.
Yes,
sir. We have an FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, a former cable industry lobbyist. He's proposing to allow cable and phone companies to charge web companies for access to fast Internet lanes while the rest of us stay in the slower lanes, this net neutrality. Critics say it'll hurt innovation that you just mentioned. What do you think of this proposal?
I think you got to be very, very careful of unintended consequences on things, and I'd have to read the proposal very, very carefully. Mm. But I can tell you if it means squelching the little guy, it means if it doesn't make sense for business, especially the small operators around Montana, I'd be absolutely against it.
Republican Ryan Zinke, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
The other Republican candidates for Montana's U.S. House seat will be profiled on an upcoming Montana Evening Edition.
Before tonight's forecast, we have this update out of the Bitterroot. Flooded roadways and parkway areas, forest closures, and unrestricted access at 5 fishing access sites on the Bitterroot River and 1 on the Blackfoot. On the Bitterroot, Hannon Memorial, Darby Bridge, Woodside Bridge, Bell Crossing, and the lower portions of the Florence Bridge are impacted. There is a partial closure on Harry Morgan fishing access on the Blackfoot River. Closures and restrictions will continue until flood conditions subside. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks urges caution if venturing on or near rivers during high water. West of the Continental Divide tonight, likely cloudy with a chance of rain showers and isolated thunderstorms, lows in the 30s. Tomorrow's expect partly cloudy with a chance of rain showers and slight chance of thunderstorms, highs in the upper 60s to mid 70s. In central Montana, tonight we'll see mostly cloudy skies, scattered rain showers and isolated thunderstorms, lows 35 to 40. Tomorrow, look for partly cloudy, with a chance of rain showers through the day and slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 65 to 70. And in southwest Montana, tonight, expect mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers, snow showers and isolated thunderstorms, lows 30 to 35. Tomorrow, look for partly cloudy skies, slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 60 to 70. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Power.
three decades ago, Montana was tangled up in a debate over how to meet our future electric needs. The Montana Power Company had two large electric generators under construction at Colstrip, Colstrip Units 3 and 4. Most of that new generation was headed to the West Coast utilities, but Montana Power had a 30% interest in both of those generators. The debate was over the environmental impacts of the huge new generators, their costs to customers, and whether Montana customers actually needed all that power. Initially, the Montana Public Service Commission ruled that Montana customers should not be responsible for the costs associated with either of those new electric generators. After much political and legal tussling, Montana Power agreed not to ask customers to pay for Colstrip 4, and the Montana Public Service Commission agreed to have customers pay for Montana Power's share of Colstrip 3. Given the huge investment that Montana Power had made in those new generators, the power company faced potential bankruptcy if it could not find a customer for that power and produce a cash flow to pay for its share of the generator. It was a traumatic period for customers, regulators, and Montana Power stockholders. Partly to avoid a repeat of that Colstrip fiasco, Montana Power, the Montana Public Service Commission, the state legislature agreed to an electric utility planning process that would require power companies to carefully analyze the future demand for electricity, the alternative ways to meet that future demand, and the risks and costs, including market, environmental, and regulatory risks and costs, of the alternative sources of supply. The process now underway before the Montana Public Service Commission, analyzing Northwestern Energy's proposal to buy back the hydroelectric generators once owned by the Montana Power Company, involves the same sort of analysis of electric supply alternatives that was put in place a quarter century ago. Northwestern Energy thinks that buying back the hydroelectric projects will help reduce future risks significantly, but at an upfront cost. Northwestern likens that upfront cost to the cost of an insurance policy that protects you against potential future losses. The critics of the higher hydro repurchase, on the other hand, say that Northwestern is asking customers to pay higher electric prices now based on speculative and uncertain future events that may never occur. As a result, they say customers will be burdened on into the future, even if those feared future events never take place. Conceptually, it's difficult to understand that criticism. That logic would suggest that none of us should ever buy, say, fire insurance. Almost none of us will see our homes burned down. Yet most of us make fire insurance payments year in and year out. Obviously, we pay attention to the cost of that insurance, but we do not dismiss the idea of paying some insurance costs just because a future house fire is speculative and uncertain. If such events were not speculative and uncertain, we would know exactly what was going to happen and when, and we would take steps to avoid that damage. It is the politically loaded character of one of the major risks associated with coal and natural gas-fueled electric generation that actually energizes the critics of the hydroelectric buyback, namely the risk and costs of government regulations aimed at reducing carbon emissions from fossil fuel-burning electric generators. But one can be opposed to possible negative consequences and still take steps to minimize the risk of them damaging us. None of us wants our home to burn down, and we take steps to keep that from happening. But we still have fire insurance. The regulation of carbon emissions is not really speculative and uncertain. EPA regulations of the carbon emissions from new electric generators will be published in 4 months. The EPA regulations of carbon emissions from existing electric generators will be published in about a year, and states will then have another year to develop their implementation plans. Dozens of older coal-fired electric generators are being retired nationwide, including the only coal-fired generators in Washington and Oregon. Regulation of carbon emissions is underway. The costs are being felt. It would be foolhardy for Northwestern Energy to ignore that fact when choosing additional electric resources to fill out the electric supply portfolio that serves its Montana customers. Northwestern Energy is mandated by good business sense as well as state law and Montana Public Service Commission regulations to face uncertainty directly and mitigate the costs associated with it, not ignore it because it is uncertain. That includes the uncertain costs of carbon regulation, the uncertain regional electric market prices, the uncertain natural gas and coal prices, the uncertain water flows in our rivers, the uncertain demands of its customers, the uncertain weather, etc., etc. Northwestern claims to have done that and concluded that repurchasing the Montana Power hydroelectric resources will help significantly in managing many of those risks. We should be focused on that Northwestern risk management strategy that seeks to cope with an unavoidably uncertain future and the costs and benefits associated with that strategy. It was for good historical reasons that electric utility planning in Montana and elsewhere set aside the childish fantasy that we live in a certain and predictable world.
Tom Power is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News. From NPR.